Welcome, everyone, to episode 345 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today the regular season is set to resume in less than a week. So we are going to do one of my co-host's favorite things and rank everything. We are going to rank all of the teams in Orlando from worst to best in terms of which teams have the best chance of winning a title, which teams you should actually care about once the seeding games start on Thursday. So before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a guy who can actually enjoy basketball at a reasonable hour for a change, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
See, that is very accurate. I'm doing well, thank you. I've been watching basketball at like 9 p.m., which is insane. Like that's usually just Sundays when the NBA had those early games that all the players complain about. So So it's been nice. And let me just go back a little bit, because you said in terms of one of my favorite things, just ranking stuff. Let's be honest here. The problem that I have with rankings are that they are never set in stone. Like, we make an episode here and we rank something, and then, like, in 2 weeks, that, some of the things that we've said is no longer relevant. Mm-hmm. And then we have to redo it. So
that's
maybe,
true for everything.
Maybe we should just be a ranking podcast.
I'm down for it if you are.
And ranking podcast, where the entire purpose of our pod is just ranking guys and handing out awards.
Then we'd be like basketball Twitter, just in podcast form.
Oh, God. Well, let's not do that then.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a fair point, but I would counter that by saying that's true just about the NBA in general, right? Like, you go into the season with expectations for certain teams, and then some teams and players outperform expectations. We have to readjust accordingly. Some fall short of expectations. We have to readjust accordingly. So I almost think of this as like a time capsule where, in the preseason, you can go back and say like, oh, okay, which teams did we know were going to be good? Which teams came out and surprised us? Like a Toronto or a Boston was much better than we thought, or like Philly was much worse than we thought. It's the same thing with these scrimmage or these seeding games in the rest of the season. It's like, okay, which teams should we actually pay attention to? Like, if you have not been paying attention to sports for the last 4 months, which, bless your heart, I don't blame you. if you are coming back into the NBA, you have not paid attention at all, you don't know who is in or who's out of the bubble, whatever, this episode can help you, get your bearings back, basically. Like,
all right, that line of thinking I like. That's good. Yeah. I can dig that.
Okay, good. So I don't really want to spend much time on the bottom few teams because I don't think there's much to say about them. But who would be, of the 22 teams down in Orlando right now, who is the bottom of your list?
I mean, it's got to be Washington, right?
Yes. I mean, for me, it's like Washington and Brooklyn. I don't care what order you put them in.
Yeah.
It's 22-21. Move on. They're just so depleted in terms, like Bradley Beal's out. Davis Bertans is out. Kyrie's out. Kevin Durant's out. Like, the Nets had like a wave of Spencer Dinwiddie's out. There's just a ton of guys. Like, even they tried to sign Michael Beasley and he's not playing now. So Justin Anderson is a fill-in, is going to be like one of their main players in Orlando. They're both just dead in the water. Unfortunately, one of these teams is going to make the playoffs because that's how the East is just going to shake out. Thankfully, it's just going to be a 4-game sweep by the Bucks. Giannis won't have to work very much in the first round, and then we don't have to think about these teams again until December.
So. Okay, so legit question. Question. Should Giannis play in the first round?
I mean, yes, but like 15 minutes a game,
right?
Yeah, just keep him like in conditioning, in basketball shape. But yeah, I mean, he's not gonna need, he played 30 minutes a game in the regular season. He's not gonna need more than that during the first round either.
And like, I mean, I'm down for that, like him just having preseason minutes. That would be fantastic. In a playoff setting, that would be the first time ever.
Yeah. And I will get to Orlando shortly, I'm sure. But if the Orlando Magic do not win the 7 seed, they should just be relegated to the G League. Like, they should have to give up all their players, like, start a Seattle Kraken in the NBA, just push all their players to Seattle. It would be an outright embarrassment for that Magic team not to get the 7 seed over the ghost of the Brooklyn Nets or the ghost of the corpse of the Washington Wizards.
I would agree. By the way, so one thing I'll be taking note of, and I'm just saying this so I don't forget, so I don't forget to mention it later, rather. Aaron Gordon seemed to be handling the ball a lot more in Orlando's offense. And this is based on one scrimmage, but it's still interesting. Like, that's a wrinkle that I'm very curious to learn more about.
Yeah, when we get back to Orlando shortly, there's one other thing I want to circle back on. But who do you have at number 20? Or is it Orlando?
I think so, right? No, actually not Orlando. No, it's got to be Phoenix, I think.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, I had them a little higher.
So, yeah, well, we have some very dedicated Suns fans who listen to this podcast and always get upset with me whenever I complain about them. But I just don't think that they are there. I mean, Kelly Oubre isn't there. It's just...
In terms of them not having a chance to make the playoffs, or like them not being entertaining to watch, or some combination of the two?
I actually think they're more entertaining to watch, at least this year, in terms of how they were in years past. Like, they actually have competent point guard play this time around, which is fun. Like, that is legitimately fun. They have a 19-12 center, which is also fun. And then, of course, Devin Booker, who's tremendously fun. But outside of that, I don't think that they have enough talent to really make a dent in all of this. This is a team, I think, that is on the brink of being something, but they just don't have the pieces right now in the bubble, and they're still one full-time starter short in Oubre. I don't know. It feels like this could implode, at least bubble-wise, really quickly.
That is fair. I'm honestly surprised. My number 20 team was the San Antonio Spurs, just because no LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, if you're rating teams with playoff chances, you might as well put the Spurs and the Suns in the same bucket, because neither one of them has any realistic chance of forcing that play-in tournament. They're not going to jump over the number of teams that they need to. The Spurs...
I have a hot take.
Oh, okay.
I have a slight... It might be a slight hot take.
Oh, can I guess what you're going to say?
Yeah.
That the Spurs are better off without LaMarcus Aldridge?
See, I knew that's what you were going to say, and that what I'm going to say sounds a little bit like that, but not... I have to frame this accurately.
Okay.
LaMarcus Aldridge is still a very, very good player. I would always prefer to have him on the court, but I think not having him on the court just forces more onto the guards, and in particular the guards who can shoot, like Bryn Forbes. Derek White, even though he isn't like a high volume shooter, but he can stroke the three ball. Patty Mills, like those guys, I think. Oh wait, Mills is there, right?
I don't remember hearing that he isn't. So
no, right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay. Either way, I think him not being there and taking those, what was it, like 10 to 15, you know, 2-pointers a game. Like, I think it could be interesting to see them just kind of revert back to being more of a distance-oriented team, with DeMar DeRozan actually playing more of a downhill kind of game. What I think could be beneficial for them is trying to emulate what the Rockets is doing, or did before the season ended, where they basically had Russell Westbrook, a non-shooter, kind of being used as this guy who creates a lot of points in the paint, and just have him go downhill all the time while being flanked with shooters. Like, DeMar in that role, I think, could be very, very entertaining. And also, I kind of want to see Deontay Murray shoot the three a little bit more. Because why not? I mean, he didn't shoot it a whole lot, but he did hit 38% of his threes this year. Like, why not?
Yeah, and Pop has said, you know, the playoffs would be great, but we're here mostly for development. So it sounds like the young guys are going to get more burn. Like, he's not going to play DeMar DeRozan 38 minutes a game,
right,
just to chase the 1% shot at the playoffs. So yeah, I mean, from that perspective, like, I think Phoenix and San Antonio are in the same boat. Like, I'm more, the only reason I'm interested in either one of those teams is not because I think they have a real shot at the playoffs. It's like, I want to see their young guys and how they've continued to develop, you know, in the past couple months. Like, we got the first look at Phoenix on Thursday night, and we see DeAndre Ayton, like, knock down a three, which, you know, one guy has now going to get a face tattoo because of it, which is hilarious.
Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't see this? Yeah, there's someone on Twitter, like, a couple days, I think, like, last week even, tweeted, if DeAndre Ayton hits a three in Orlando, I'll get a face tat, no cap. And then DeAndre Ayton hits the three, and the Suns' Twitter account, like, posted the screenshot. It was like, we got the receipts, dude. So,
oh, no.
Yeah. So don't, as always, the lesson is never tweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm interested to see, like, you know, we bemoaned for the entire season how Murray and Derek White barely got any run together. Like, this is finally the chance, hopefully, that those two guys actually get to play some serious minutes together. And your point about DeRozan is really interesting. Like, having him basically operate offensively as, like, a power forward or a center and just flanking him with guards. Like, they'll get killed defensively, but it'd be interesting, if nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, that you make me almost want to bump the Spurs up a little bit more. But, no, I'm keeping them at 20 for now.
So, How funny would this be if the Spurs started playing their young guys and they started winning because of it?
There'd be a lot of victory laps on Twitter from Spurs fans who are like, why aren't you playing these guys together at all?
Yeah. I would love it. And I definitely wouldn't rub it in Jesse's face whatsoever.
All right. Who do you have at 19?
Oh, man. You keep putting me on the spot here with those. I don't know. It's like, I guess maybe Orlando.
Okay. Yeah, I had them 18, so it's the same boat basically.
Yeah, this is like the East and West thing, I think. Like, where we see the difference. I mean, I like Orlando on its surface. There are some things there that I like, but ultimately I don't think there's a whole lot of cohesiveness, you know, structure-wise on the team. You have a lot of talent, but you don't really have the chemistry. You don't really have anything that you can go to all the time. It almost seems like it's a committee thing where sometimes one guy steps up, hits 18 points, and then another day it's like another one. And that could work in your benefit if you had enough guys doing it, but they don't. And you still don't have that one reliable scorer outside of Vucevic. Like, it's, I don't know. They just feel a little bit off. I like their overall talent. I just don't like the gathering of it. The sum of the parts are better than the total product, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, we've gone back years now bemoaning their roster construction, so we don't need to belabor the point. But front court glut definitely not helping. I will say, if Jonathan Isaac were in Orlando, in the bubble in Orlando, I should say, I'd push them a little bit higher because I think he's by far their most entertaining player from both a long-term development perspective. Like, I think he has the highest upside of anyone on the team right now. Hmm. And then also, I mean, the guy's just so unique and versatile defensively and can just beat anywhere with those go-go gadget arms.
Right.
Him not being there, you know, the Magic, like, they've just have a crappy offense. They're going to get killed in the first round. They're inevitably going to, like, beat the Raptors in game one and then get swept four games right after that. It's just how it's set in stone. When the Raptors are in the playoffs, they're going to lose game one. I will say this. I noticed some comments from Steve Clifford the other, I think yesterday, about Markelle Fultz is not going to play in their scrimmage on Saturday, which I found interesting. He said he's just, like, conditioning-wise is not there yet. So, I mean, honestly, like, Fultz is one of the only reasons I'd be intrigued by this team as well, to see if he's continued to build upon the progress he made this year, or if, you know, like, maybe he remembered how to shoot in the last 4 months. And if he did, that changes everything about the Magic's trajectory. So if he's not playing, I mean, hopefully he's ready by the seeding games, but If he's not, I just don't care about this team at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I mean, I saw that you DM'd me and was like, oh boy, this isn't great.
He lost Muscle Watch. He was the one guy who did not win Muscle Watch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's rough. Like, he's already had it rough enough. Hopefully this kid bounces back. I really want him to succeed. I really do after everything. Like, this is not, it's not fair when you're 21 years old that you have, like, millions upon millions of fans of a league just going at you and pointing out every single time you touch the ball, oh, you can't shoot. Like, that's got to be difficult, especially at that age. So I just want him to be ready for the game. And if he starts knocking down threes, I'm going to be so happy. Not just for him, but for the Magic, because this is what they've needed. They've needed this dynamic shooting guard. Not shooting guard, but a guard who can shoot and create off the dribble. This has no relevance whatsoever. This is just for fun and giggles. So you know how NBA 2K has these my career things? Like my player...
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I actually decided I would want to make a point guard, and I would want to like direct him towards the Orlando Magic, and this is in 2020. And so I became this shooting point guard, a guy who could really shoot the ball, and it opened up everything, and they won 64 games in the first season.
What?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I'm just saying. I know it's a computer game. I know it has no real reality whatsoever. I'm just saying, having a guard who can shoot consistently at a high volume, especially if you do Orlando Magic, that can give space to all these big men and wings and other guards running around, that would open everything up. They need someone to open everything up.
Yeah, that is for sure. Unfortunately, it does not sound like that will happen this year. So,
no.
Yes, no. I think our tepid interest in the Magic is valid. I had Spurs 20, Magic 18, Suns 17. I had the Kings at 19.
A good one.
Yeah, I mean, I love De'Aaron Fox. I love Buddy Hield. I love Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Yeah.
Bogdan, yeah. The Marvin Bagley injury is a bummer. He's going to miss... the entire rest of the season, and that sucks. And then Harry B, I believe, tested positive for COVID, and I don't think he is with the team as of yet. So I think two or three episodes ago at this point, we were talking about, you know, this could have been the opportunity to see Harry B a lot at the four, downsize, especially with Bagley out now. You know, that clears out one obstacle, and we could have had, like, Barnes at the four, Rashawn Holmes at the five, and then Hield, Bogdanovic, De'Aaron Fox, and that would have been really interesting. You know, hopefully, I mean, knock on wood, Harry B will be fine and will be able to join the team at some point. But suddenly it's like, oh boy, the Kings are starting to get a little thin in the front court until he does join the team. And you know, again, it goes back to, like, if we're talking about teams that I think are going to be in this thing for a long time, I do not think the Kings have a very good shot at forcing that play-in tournament and make the playoffs.
Yeah. Full disclosure, by the way, just so we're on the same page moving forward, I have lost all sense of control about who's with their teams and who isn't anymore. Like,
yeah.
I don't remember every... Like, now Lou Williams apparently left.
Yep.
Like, I don't remember. There are so many guys in and out. Like, I had completely forgotten that Trevor Ariza was out of there. Like, there are so many names where I'm just going to... So basically what I'm saying is to you out there listening, if I bring up a guy at some point and he's not with the team, pardon. I apologize. I trust that you know that it is not intentional. Yeah. So just a heads up on that. I agree with you 100% about the Kings. You know, too depleted. You know, they don't play a game that tailors De'Aaron Fox whatsoever. It's not going to be pretty. And, you know, the only thing I'm kind of optimistic about is we know that Vivek Ranadive isn't afraid to fire coaches pretty quickly.
Mm.
I would like either, like, make Luke Walton run more, and if not, just get him the hell out of there.
So I don't know when this is going live. I think it's sometime this weekend. I believe this is from Rick Bucher, but we have a piece on Bleacher Report going up sometime in the next few days. It sounds like COVID, as you're experiencing with the Bulls too, I think a lot of teams are going to be reluctant to fire coaches just because of the economic factors behind it. So yeah. I actually have a feeling that no matter what happens, Luke Walton is probably safe and Vlade Divac is probably safe, which is a bummer because Luke Walton sucked a lot of the fun out of a Kings team that coming into the year we were pretty optimistic about.
Well, that's because they ran last year. They right? ran. I mean, right? it was a lot. It was a lot more fun. It was a lot more effective, especially for De'Aaron Fox. Like it was just. It was high quality basketball, and this year it's just been different and not in a good way.
Yes, agreed. So that brings us to, I guess, do you want to just, in some order, you had those six teams at the bottom, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, look, full disclosure, I don't have them ranked as such because I think everything can factor in. You know, I don't even remember all the guys who aren't there. And right. at the same time, I'm just like, this is a bubble. Like right now we're going through scrimmages, which tells us only like very few bits and pieces here and there. And at the same time, it's been like a 5-month layoff. Like I don't have the data to right. sit here right. and lock teams in and like this power ranking is going to be like locked and set in stone for the next 3 months. Like, no, I wish I had that, that skill, but I don't.
Yeah. Full disclosure, on the note about, like, forgetting who's there and what, I did not remember, like, until a week ago that Markieff Morris was on the Lakers. That was, like, because there were just so many changes at the trade deadline and right afterward, and then the season shut down pretty quickly thereafter. So, like, I remembered the big ones, of course, like, it's still taking a while to process mentally that Andrew Wiggins is on the Warriors, but like I at least remembered that. But then someone brought up Markieff Morris, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that happened. That's a thing." Okay.
Well, I mean, you don't feel too bad. I had a friend who actually, you know, he and I DM'd, and he was like, "I'm going to be so psyched to see Zion debut." And I was like, "Debut? What do you mean?" Yeah, like he didn't play in the season. I was like, "Oh dude, no." Have you completely forgotten that he played 19 games? Oh, like, well, yeah, I had. He was completely convinced that this would be Sion's first games. And yeah. I say, and then I also had to disappoint him and tell him that he's not right. in right. currently. Right. So I think our talk was very disappointing to him.
Okay, let's go on then to number 16. This is where I started to have a lot of trouble. I think there are the three East teams of, you know, the 7 through 9 in the East easily at the toward the bottom, and then the three West teams that have very little shot at making the playoffs also in that tier. Here's where I'm, because like now we've got a couple teams that will not make the playoffs. And then you've got the top six in the East as well. So who did you have at number 16?
So it's between Portland and New Orleans for me. New Orleans solely because, like I just said, that Zion isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've gotten an update about his return yet, right?
There has been nothing about the actual like timetable for his return.
Right.
I know, you know, Shams had that tweet out on Thursday about like updated quarantine procedure.
Right.
And people ran with it and like, oh, the NBA is rigging it so Zion doesn't have to quarantine. And I don't know if he clarified that tweet at all. The way I read it was this is like guys who are leaving for their own medical reason. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it does clear for like family emergencies or for births or whatever. Because I know that's going to be an issue with a couple guys while we're down here. But either way, it did not seem to apply to Zion. So, yes, we don't know when Zion is coming back, how many of the seeding games he will be able to play in, how long his quarantine is going to be. So, yes, the Pelicans were definitely a team that I struggled with placing as well because of that.
Yeah, well, then it's pretty easy for me because since we don't know, I have to put them below Portland. And okay. I'm sorry, Pelly's fans, but I mean, I think that's fair and reasonable.
Yeah. I ended up putting them a little higher just because I'm hopeful that he will come back at some point. And even if he doesn't, I mean, the development Brandon Ingram this year, Lonzo Ball, like it somehow flew under the radar pretty much that Lonzo Ball had by far his career best season. Like he, now that he's not playing for the Lakers, he doesn't have the fanfare with him and Voldemort's not puffing him up, or maybe he's too busy puffing LaMelo up. But yeah, I mean, seeing Lonzo turn into just like a genuinely good basketball player was really fun. So I'd like to continue seeing him. I'm always going to have a soft spot for Jrue Holiday and JJ Redick too. And then, you know, like the Pelicans, ever since Derek Favors came back, he missed a ton of time early in the season. Their defense was terrible. When he came back, they started playing well. It wasn't just Zion. I mean, Zion obviously gave them even more of a, you know, an immediate uplift. But like Favors low key really helps that team out. So I think the Pelicans, Zion or not, have one of the best shots. I think it really is between them and Portland for that number 9 seed for the potential play-in tournament. So I actually ended up putting the Pelicans at 13. I had the Blazers at 16. I was torn between them and the Pacers. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not with you on that one. I can't, I mean, I get that Portland doesn't have, like, a Risa.
Mm-hmm.
They still have a ton, though.
It really came down to depth for me. Because, like, of course, Dame and CJ are so, I mean, either one of them could go off for 40 or 50 and make me look like an idiot. Like, they'll be fun to watch. It was great seeing Nurkic back. Or 60, yeah. You know, in these scrimmages, it's like, it was so good to see Yusuf Nurkic play basketball again. And he looks good. Same with Zach Collins. Like, they both played well. They don't look like they lost a step at all. Skinny Melo at the three is fun. But, yeah, it's just like when you go to the bench, that's what's going to be – I think that's what's probably going to deflate Portland's chances of making a real run here is just without Ariza, without Rodney Hood, their wing depth is so low. I mean, you're going to be banking on, you know, some younger guys, which – great. I know you love that in particular. But yeah, I just don't know if they have the depth to measure up, but we'll see. Maybe they will. And
I'm probably looking at it as them having to rely a bit more on Dame and CJ. And in that event, I'm totally okay with it.
That's fair. Yeah, that's super fair. I'm excited to watch that. I mean, I'm really every team from 16 onward, I am either excited to watch or at least like morbidly curious to watch.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
So I had Indiana at 15. Who did you have?
Oh, wow, really? Okay. Is that because they're an East team?
I mean, we don't know about Oladipo yet. He's playing in scrimmages, but he's saying he has to see how he feels before he commits to the season. I also saw the report, I think Tony East, our colleague at Forbes, apparently Domantas Sabonis has plantar fasciitis, and I don't know how that's going to affect his availability for the seeding games or for the playoffs, but I mean, that's usually, I know that term more from American football than I do from basketball. I feel like it's more common there, and that's just like, I think the only cure is rest, which he's probably not going to get enough of. So
it is. Every big man under the Tom Thibodeau era in Chicago had plantar fasciitis all the time.
Yeah. So it's just, I mean, he will presumably play through it, but it's just going to be a nagging, annoying injury. It might slow him down a little bit. You know, I mean, part of it's there in the East. And if Oladipo does sit out, I mean, they're probably dead in the water in round one anyway.
Well, see, that is interesting because I had not seen the plantar fasciitis thing. Mm. And that does change my perception of Indiana, absolutely, because Sabonis right now, I think it's fair to say, is their best player, ignoring, of course, Victor Oladipo altogether because right now he's just a big-ass question mark.
Right.
And if Sabonis is in any way compromised as well from an injury perspective, that lessens their ceiling significantly and also lowers the floor a lot. Like, what are you left with? Like, T.J. Warren as your primary shot taker? Like, right. I like Warren, but not as a primary guy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, Brogdon will take on a bigger role as he did, you know, early in the season with Oladipo out. But
yeah, that's true.
No Jeremy Lamb off the bench hurts them as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a bummer.
Yeah. You know what? I'm actually going to take a page out of your book and agree with you on that one. That's fair. I think that's fair because those are valid concerns.
Good. So let's move to 14. I'm guessing if you were torn between the Blazers and the Pelicans at 16, that's you're going to put the Pelicans at 14?
No, the Pelicans I had lower. I brought them up earlier. I don't like the rankings. You say the numbers, but I'm not quite there.
Okay, that's fine.
But, I mean, I had Portland after the Pelicans, at least.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. For me, now it's Memphis.
Yep, me too.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're just... See, here's the thing, right? I kind of want to place them a little bit higher, but it's all theoretical.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been pushing this narrative that young guys might actually come back and look significantly better. Like, rookies might come back with the mindset of actually being sophomores simply because they've had so much time off. It mirrors what an NBA offseason is in terms of length.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's solely theoretical. Now, if Ja Morant comes back and in this bubble averages 25 and 11, which Danmel White might, I mean, who knows?
Right.
Then they go up on my board.
Yeah.
But right now, we just don't know.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, also, even if they do hold on to the 8 seed, they're going to play the Lakers in round one. I don't like their odds of getting very far in that matchup. So I think if you're looking at, like, oh, okay, who has a realistic shot of going at least to the conference semifinals, I don't think... Whichever team wins the 8 seed, I don't think any of them are going to beat the Lakers, barring, you know, LeBron James or Anthony Davis getting hurt, which, knock on wood, won't happen. So, you know, again, if we're going, like, through power rankings here, it's like, it's fair to be excited about the Grizzlies. If I'm ranking them in terms of league pass appeal, they'd be much higher on the list, because I love seeing Ja Morant play. I want to see Jaren Jackson Jr. The Justice Winslow injury is a bummer.
I would have, but really they never played with him. So, like, it's one of those situations where they aren't losing something they had. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to see how it looked. Like,
oh, of course.
From my own curiosity. But yes, I mean, it's not going to affect them on the court.
Can I just interrupt you and kind of ask you something, because I'm really curious? It's just so we don't move too far past the subject. You said that obviously the Lakers would take care of Memphis in a 1-8 playoff series. Now, I don't disagree with that, but when you look at the teams out there, don't you get the sense that Memphis could at least give LA one hell of a series?
Yeah, I think of the possible 8 seeds, the Pelicans probably have the Grizzlies probably have the best shot of not necessarily upsetting the Lakers, but at least pushing them to like 6.
Yeah.
And I think it's mostly just like Ja Morant clearly does not give a damn and like will not be intimidated by LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the other side. He's like, the kid has absolutely no fear. And they're like too young to know they shouldn't be there yet.
Yeah. I just like the amount of players that they have that they can throw at Davis as well. So, you know, I know that Valanciunas isn't a great defender, but like he will clear the boards. Like, he is a big body. You have Jaren Jackson, who's a great shot blocker. You have Brandon Clark, who's just disciplined as all hell. Like, I have a feeling that if there is a team out there that could at least make things difficult on Davis, is probably the right way to say it, it's Memphis.
Yeah, right. I mean, they just have good size, and any team that plays the Lakers, that's how they're going to beat you, especially with Avery Bradley now out. Rajon Rondo out for the first round, probably at least.
Oh, God. Morant is going to average 25 and 11.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like, the Lakers aren't going to rely on Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith taking a ton of shots. They're going to be running a grand majority of their offense through their front court. So to have it like a, you know, I don't think Houston really wants any part of that because they're so undersized. I think right. a team, Portland, I guess, has the size too now with Nurkic, Collins, and Hassan Whiteside. I don't know if the Pelicans have the size that they would need to match up against the Lakers. So that would make me nervous.
But I would agree with that. Yeah.
But the Grizzlies definitely do.
Yeah. I think there is some potential there. Not necessarily upset potential, but I could see a scenario wherein they're like 2-2 and, you know, the headlines begin to pop out.
Yeah.
Like, are the Grizzlies for real? Like, right, I could definitely right, see right. that.
Yeah. Okay, so we both had Grizzlies at 14. Where are you going at 13?
I'm probably going to go OKC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, so what Chris Paul did this year was outstanding. I think they have a very efficient young squad. What I question is, you know, when push comes to shove in the playoff series, can you really play, you know, guys like Terrence Ferguson, Hamidou Diallo, Luke Anstort? Mm-hmm. Like, can you play those guys when they are so, like, non-existent offensively?
Mm-hmm.
That's the big questions. The big question I'm sitting here with, because otherwise everything has to go through four players. Which, you know, having four big scorers, that is definitely not bad. But in a playoff context, I would be kind of concerned.
That is fair. I had the Pelicans 13, the Jazz at number 12, and OKC 11. The reason I put Jazz behind OKC largely Bojan Bogdanovic's absence. Yeah. I have the feeling that we're gonna have like Groundhog Day, and it's gonna be Donovan Mitchell having way too much on his shoulders, and it being really easy to defend this team. And you know, Donnie's gonna take 20 plus shots a game, shoot somewhere in the low 40s. The wild card, of course, being Mike Conley. He was so hot and cold the whole year. There's been some positive buzz coming out from Utah folks about Mike Conley. And like maybe this time off gave him a chance to kind of mentally reset and be like, all right, that was my first season with the team. This is a new season. This is year two. I know what worked. I know what didn't. Let's get back into this thing. So
he's using my theory. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might. I mean, if that happens, then I am too low on the Utah Jazz right now. But, you know, I am skeptical of their ability with that Bogdanovic to keep enough of the load off of Donovan Mitchell for them to make real noise in the playoffs. So, yeah. You know, if I'm looking at the 3-6 in the West, or really, I mean, 2-7, you can even say, it's hard to say who's going to end up where. But I would think just based on pure, like, I don't care about seedings or opponents, like, who would I assign a higher percentage of advancing right now? Probably OKC over Utah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's fair.
So where did you have Utah on your list?
Right after, actually.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So we're pretty much on the same wavelength here. Good. One thing is Bogdanovic, and you brought up like Donnie, of course, having to take a lot of shots. Yeah, again, it's all theoretical with Mike Conley, right? If he mm-hmm. looks good and he is like back to where he should be, great. But I'm gonna need to see it.
Right. Right.
That's just that's just the way the cookie crumbles at this point. Having a theoretical good result is fine, but I'm gonna need to see it. And I wonder if, you know, Jordan Clarkson, he came in, he was really, really good for them in terms of like being an offensive, you know, microwave type of scorer. Mm-hmm. But sometimes those guys, they drop off after a bit, like when they stay with the team for a little bit too long, or maybe actually enter their second season with a team, like they don't have the ability to mirror or mimic what they did the year before. And while I know this is the same season, you know, having that break off, I wonder if Clarkson is going to be as deadly and as efficient as he was over his 34-game stint with the Jazz initially. So that's one of the concerns I have as well.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
I mean, we just see it so so frequently, I think. You know, we have those guys who come in and put up a ton of points, then they get a new contract or something, yeah. Or they just get a summer off and return. They're just not the same player. And when you're one of those guys who have to shoot, like in terms of being a rhythm player, oh boy, the margin for error is really not great there.
Right, right. So that brings us into the top 10. I'm impressed that I'm sure it will be a different order, but we have the same 10 teams in our respective top 10s. Who is number 10 for you?
Philly.
Whoa! Hater!
Am I, though?
A little bit.
I mean, come on, though. Come on. This year did not go as well as it should have. Let's be honest here.
Oh, no. No one would dispute that.
this was not a good year. Again, we talked at length about Ben Simmons the other day, and that's great. But again, Brian, it's theoretical.
Yeah.
We still haven't seen it.
Yeah. If you have Philly higher, it's a leap of faith for sure.
Right. I mean, at this point, it's just there's too much data for this year that counts against them, I feel like, that I need to be convinced. I need to see something that can make me change my mind. This shouldn't be one of those things where I go, oh, the tail will find a way. No, man, they had 65 games to find a way.
Right.
And they didn't.
Yeah.
So,
If they were rolling out the same starting five, if they were going with Horford, they were keeping Shake off the bench, they weren't moving Simmons off the ball, I'd be right with you in thinking.
Again, theoretical, you don't know the results of that yet.
I know, but like, I know the results of the other one. And I know the results were not good. And on paper, I mean, we saw when Horford moved to the bench, and Brett Brown has cited this repeatedly in recent days. You know, the first game he went to the bench was that game against the Clippers right before the All-Star break. They staggered minutes basically exclusively with Embiid and Horford until the fourth quarter. And then they finally played together. And that was one of the Sixers' best wins all season. So I do think there's something to, you know, we haven't seen this new starting five has not played a single minute together. They are about to tip off against Memphis in this scrimmage. And this will be the first time they've ever played together against another opponent. So you're right, it is theoretical, but the theory makes a lot of sense compared to what they were doing before, and we have seen Simmons and Embiid without Horford play better than when all three of them were together. We know what Shake brings to the table as a shooter, pick-and-roll creator. I'm optimistic. I'm like, I'm not, you know, I joke with you about the Sixers, like, going and winning the ring this year because...
Are you really...
This broken team deserves to win in this broken season. Yeah, no, I like, they could win. I mean, any of the top 15 teams could hypothetically win. I don't think it's especially likely. I do have them a few notches higher on my list.
Let me guess. You have them higher than Dallas and Houston, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
We're going to have issues here.
Okay, so I had Dallas at 10.
Yeah, I don't buy Dallas at 10.
Where do you have them?
I don't have them at a specific spot. I just have them higher up. That's what I'm telling you. I didn't make the initial list. This is like going off of you, and like I just don't have them that low. I have them significantly higher up. If you're putting me on the spot, I probably have them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8.
Oh, okay. So that's not that much higher.
No.
It's two teams. Yeah. Okay. I mean, again, for me, it comes down to their chances of advancing beyond the first round. I think whoever Philly draws, that is probably going to be more even than, you know, if Dallas stays at 7 and gets the Clippers in the first round. I don't know. I mean, we'll see what the Clippers we'll get to later on, of course, but
right,
they are... You know, given the number of bodies they have lost, just temporarily, hopefully, but like right now they're without Patrick Beverley, without Montrezl Harrell, without Lou Williams. Those are three big names. So, I mean, if those three guys aren't back by the first round of the playoffs, I take back everything I said about Dallas not having a real shot to knock them off. But you know, if everyone is back in the fold by mid-August, whoever the Clippers play in the first round, I'm not feeling great about. And if Dallas is in that seventh spot, you know, especially without Dwight Powell, that gives me some concern. Right. But, like, I mean, the offense is hard to, you know, what, historically great offense. Luka's fantastic. KP is fantastic. Seth Curry was a flamethrower yesterday in that scrimmage.
Sixth man of the year, Maxi Kleber, has been outstanding.
Yeah. Boban hit a three. I mean, if Boban's shooting threes, maybe the Dallas Mavericks are just going to win the title. I don't know.
Boban has hit four threes this year.
I know. Boban is just an actual gem. That's all it boils down to. But yeah, I did have them 10 just because of, you know, theoretically, if they're staying at 7 and get the Clippers, a fully healthy Clippers team in the first round, it's going to take a lot more than Boban threes to knock off the Clippers.
So for me with the Mavs, let's just get into it because we can skip them when we reach 8, or at least yeah. I do. It's not just the offense. It's the chemistry. And this isn't theoretical. They love each other. They love playing with each other as well. There is a sense of camaraderie. There's a sense of togetherness on that roster that I am completely in love with. They have so much fun, everyone on the court together. They share laughs. They are there for each other. Whenever you see someone fall down, you see four other guys rush to him to pick him up. That you can't just like copy that onto a more talented team, because that doesn't exist. That has to be like, that has to grow organically, and it does. And a big part of that is Luka. Luka with his constant like smile and positivity, that rubs up on everybody. And so far, at least this year, it's worked. You see a team that's less flustered. You see a team that if you get a loss, okay, well, we'll bounce back, you know, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. There isn't that sense of beaten down mentality that they had in years past. Like, losses don't really affect them as much, but on the other side of the spectrum, when they win, they carry that momentum forward. I think what they're doing right now is establishing a culture, or re-establishing a culture, rather, after Dirk, which is really, really centered around positivity. And that, to me, is a huge, huge asset, especially when it comes to the bubble life. Because if you like being around each other beforehand, and now where you're forced to be around one another for a long period of time, but you get along, that's an asset. That's an advantage. And let's not forget league's best offense like ever. And the fact that they have a 21-year-old who's basically averaging 30, 10, and 10. Like, the talent is there as well. I wouldn't even be shocked if they made it up to like 6th seed and made a run for the conference finals. That wouldn't necessarily shock me.
See, you're talking about teams having chemistry and liking each other, and having followed the Sixers all year, I actually prefer the exact opposite. No, it's a fair point. Like, entertainment wise, I would have them higher, and if they can make it up to the six, yeah, I mean, I'm a little more optimistic about their chances. I still don't know that they could beat either the Lakers or the Clippers, but maybe. I mean, if they get hot, who knows?
They're a team that I wouldn't necessarily rule out. Now, do I think it's likely that they beat one of those? No. Would I rule it out? No chance in hell. Chance in hell.
I mean, I think whoever gets, if they do stay at 7 and the Clippers do stay at 2, I don't think the Clippers are psyched to play them in the first round.
Oh, no. They would hate it.
Yeah. It's not like the Bucks getting the corpse of the Nets or the corpse of the Wizards, like, where it's, right, you know, we were joking, like, Giannis is playing 10 minutes a game. Like, that's going to be a tough series. Yeah. Right. We are correctly noting that Giannis will play 10 minutes. Dallas is going to be a tough out regardless. I just, you know, compared to some of these other teams, I think they have a worse shot of going deep in the playoffs.
Right.
So you brought up Houston. They were 9 for me. I'm guessing same-ish area for you?
Yeah, 9, because I have Dallas over them. Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And for me, it's just, you know, if you're talking about the theoretical, we saw a month's worth of the small ball experiment, and it worked really well some nights and did not work at all other nights. So
they were 8-6. Yeah.
Yeah. Russ, you know, we talked a few episodes ago, tested positive for COVID. He is in the bubble. He is now, I think he's supposed to play in the scrimmage today. So that is not a concern, at least in terms of his availability. I mean, we'll see. Knock on wood, it won't have affected him at all, and he'll be totally fine. But yeah, I mean, again, it comes down to, you know, hypothetically, if Houston stayed at 6, Denver stays at 3, and that's the first round matchup, I'm probably picking Denver in that series, assuming the Nuggets are at full strength.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I would agree with that. Because Houston right now is one of those teams where you put all your eggs in virtually one basket, and that is like the perimeter shot. Like, mm-hmm. If that's not cooking, you're done for. Like, you cannot come back. If you start the first quarter and you don't hit a 3, like, how many points are they going to put on the table?
Right. I think we saw that game play out in game 7 a couple of years ago.
Right. Now, on the flip side, if they get hot, that's a team that could, you know, hit up 150 without breaking a sweat.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's somewhere, it's difficult to find that mid-range area where they're probably going to settle in. And that's why I have them below Dallas. I could easily be wrong. Like, maybe something just clicks and has clicked because they got 5 months off to just watch film and kind of talk to each other, learn a little bit more about their schemes. Maybe they come out firing. Who knows? But I just see the three-point shot being, at times, could be a crutch.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. Okay, so you had Dallas at 8 then. I went Miami at 8. And okay. Yeah, I mean, I know it's going to piss off the Heat culture people to put Miami below Philly based on, you know, how the teams looked for a lot during the regular season, but it's like a 2-game difference separated these teams. I'm not going to focus too much on regular season standings at this point.
Right.
And for Miami, it really comes down to, do I think they, like, best, what is their best case scenario? Like, Philly, the best case scenario is a legit conference finals run, like possible finals run. I don't see that for best case Miami. I feel like best case Miami,
really,
I mean, if they stay at 4 and they play the Bucks in the second round.
No. But like, you just said a possible finals run for Philly. That means they would have to go through Milwaukee at some point as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they stay at 6, they're not meeting them until the conference finals.
Yeah. No, I hear you on that. But I'm just saying that you mentioned they brought up, you know, that they could make a finals run. Either way, Milwaukee would have to be out of there, and that's not happening. Like, Milwaukee, I penciled in for the finals.
Yeah, I think if you're telling me, like, who would you give better odds of beating Milwaukee in a 7-game series, Philly or Miami?
Miami.
Oh, interesting. No, I would go Philly still.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would.
I mean, again, if it's just like, if everything breaks right for Philly, if this scheme change works as intended, I still think Philly's upside is higher than Miami's.
Right, right. See, now that we agree on, but again, it's theoretical. We don't know. I can't sit here and say that, well, based on these changes, they stand, you know, a greater chance, because we don't know yet. The only thing we know is how they've looked so far. And what we do know is that Miami, at times, is basically looking like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. I will say this about Miami, and we've seen it. We saw in that first scrimmage where Duncan Robinson just could not miss.
Right.
And now, we're, you know, some NBA players are coming out and saying, like, look, it's, the depth perception on these courts is a lot different than it is in, like, a normal arena. And so, like, shooters, you know, the big concern, and Brett Brown was talking about this today before the scrimmage, you know, the big concern coming in was, like, oh, guys are going to need some time to shake off the rust. Shooting is going to be really bad for a couple weeks. We've seen kind of the opposite, where shooters, yeah, a lot of guys, like Seth Curry was 6 for 6 the other day as well.
Yeah.
You know, guys are not needing that time to acclimate that we thought, and maybe they're going to be more efficient than they are.
Oh, my God. I know where you're heading with this.
No,
you're heading
no.
to the hole. Well, maybe shooting isn't going to be the worst area of Philly anymore. Maybe that's going to be an asset for them.
No, it definitely will not be. They're still going to be a bad shooting team. no, I'm saying it's a strength for Miami. Like having guys like Tyler Hero, like Duncan Robinson, even Goran Dragic, who are able to knock down that shot at a high rate. I know Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo will not, but if you're
now maybe they will.
Maybe Jimmy Butler. Oh God, yeah. I take it back. If Jimmy Butler starts hitting 40% of his threes, I give the Heat a better chance of beating the Bucks than Philly. I do not think Jimmy Butler is going to start shooting 40% on threes, though. So I think I'm safe there. I'll get a face tattoo.
yeah. Don't get a face tattoo, Bri, because that means divorce. No.
But yeah, I mean, I still think like the best case scenario for Miami round two, and then you're out because you're playing the Bucks, and I just don't think they have a chance.
Yeah. See, full disclosure, I don't take future matchups into consideration when I rate. Like
that's fair.
Because, like I said a couple episodes ago, it doesn't really matter who you're going up against. When the ball tips off, nothing else matters. Go get the W. Win or go home. And that's really that mentality I think teams need to have. Otherwise, if you don't, if you're already kind of settled in with, well, we're going to get our ass kicked by Milwaukee regardless, like, okay, then go home.
Yeah.
Go home immediately. Don't even have to be in the bubble. Go home. Like, that's fine. I think for Miami, I think their mentality, that's also why I have them over Dallas. I think that their mentality is that they are one of those teams that just like looks at the throat and goes for the kill, right? Like the Heat are just on a damn mission, and Jimmy Butler is out to prove something. And I have a feeling that Jimmy Butler, when he's on a mission the way that he is right now, it's just not going to go well for the opposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a lot of trust in that Heat team.
That's fair. I mean, they definitely have the upside to give Milwaukee a scare. It's just, I mean, I think I feel similar to Dallas and the Clippers in that sense. Like, it won't be an easy series. And yeah, I guess their shooters almost certainly will get hot at some point and steal a game. But you know, I just think, again, like the best case scenario for both teams, I think Miami's ceiling is just a little bit lower than Philly's, but I have Philly at 7, so it's not a huge gap either way.
All right, yeah.
I'm guessing, so we're up to 7 for you as well. Do you have Miami there?
Yeah, that's where I had them, yes.
Okay. So then let's go, we are in the top 6 now. This is where, I mean, I think there's a pretty clear tier 1 through 3 and then 4 through 6, but sorting between these teams gets pretty difficult. So who would you put at the bottom and in that second tier? Who would you put at number 6?
Denver, unfortunately.
Yeah, me too.
So full disclosure, again, I've said full disclosure a lot this time around.
Sorry. Yeah.
So I actually think Dallas is a better team than Denver.
Oh.
But I really do. But I think that is, like, that's the baseline they're better. Because when Denver is clicking and they're playing to their maximum potential, then they're better.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what type of Denver team are we going to get?
Mm.
Like, are we going to get that, you know, where they're kind of overpassing, they're a little bit passive, you know, where Jamal Murray is not really asserting himself? Because if that happens, I'm going to drop Denver back significantly.
Yeah.
But if we're getting that crisp passing of Jokic and we're getting like a Gary Harris, and again, this is all theoretical, but we have in the past seen that Gary Harris could be a very influential two-way guy.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen Jamal Murray, you know, put up huge numbers. We have seen Nikola Jokic be an MVP caliber player. Will Barton had a great season, a bounce back year for him as well. I think there's enough known components for Denver to at least say well, they could go out there and really play a great brand of basketball for the next couple months.
Yeah.
And that is why I put them where they are, fully realizing and fully noting, however, that they could drop down if they don't pick up that responsibility. Because unlike Miami, who's on a mission, are very like killer instinct, Denver's a little bit more lackadaisical. Mm-hmm. And I think that could bite them in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you in, like, again, we talked a couple episodes ago, like, dark horse or potential dark horse title contenders. And we landed on, you know, if you had to pick someone in the West, it would be Denver, just because you're more confident in their floor as well as their ceiling relative to a team like Houston or even Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen the versions, as you said, of Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic in particular in the playoffs that they would need to get past a Lakers team or a Clippers team. But yeah, there are a lot of unknowns. I mean, hell, a lot of their rotation, I think they finally started to trickle into Orlando in the last couple days. But, you know, like Michael Porter Jr. wasn't there for a while. Monte Morris right. wasn't there for a while. A couple other guys weren't there for a while either.
Well, they had Bol Bol, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that changes things. They could always just do the New York Knicks, like, start five power forwards lineup again.
Yeah. Can I tell you something interesting? So after that one game where Bol Bol, like, had what I didn't even remember his line. It was 16 points, 6 blocks, 10 rebounds?
10 rebounds, yeah.
Okay. So the price on his rookie cards went up.
Really?
They were basically worthless before that.
That's amazing.
But I'm in a few Facebook groups about that because I'm trying to sell some of my cards.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And some of those cards, now sit tight, were offered up at $500 per card.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
That's the one economy that isn't broken right now. Basketball cards.
Basketball cards have become a currency. The thing is, though, whoever sells right now is probably going to be pretty smart, because I don't think that he's going to be mirroring what he did over the next couple of months.
Yeah, against the zombie wizards, no.
Yeah. Right now, go out, buy basketball cards, find a Bol Bol, and sell it.
Yeah, for real. God, that's crazy. I know, like, people on Twitter got carried away, about Bol Bol. And, like, it was just dumb fun, man. Like, of course he's not going to average 16-10-6 in the regular season next year or the playoffs this year. Like, people are well aware of that. Denver fans are well aware of that, too. But, like,
yeah.
You could be excited about seeing a guy just play well. Like, I know it wasn't against the strongest competition, but, like, didn't average 1.6 points per possession. You know, I saw that one tweet, whatever. Like, who cares? It was fun watching a guy who didn't get any run actually get some run, like, play well.
Pull-up three was fun.
Yeah, like, right, where he, like, blocks a shot, runs in transition, ignores Jokic, waves off Jokic, and shoots a three in transition. Yeah, it was, like, all the power to the Nuggets. And look, man, I mean, you know, having run them in the fake BR exercise and becoming well acquainted with how impossible it is to figure out Michael Porter Jr.'s trade value, like, they have two very big wild cards on that team in Porter Jr. and Bol Bol. And, like,
yeah.
I don't know that either one of them are going to hit, or they're going to hit their ceiling like they could. But if either one does, it changes everything about how we perceive the Nuggets. And if both of them hit,
oh,
buddy.
Yeah. That would be great. By the way, shout out to Bol Bol for, you know, him being translated to something in Danish.
I was gonna say I'm very proud of you for not bringing that up.
Come on, though.
Yeah.
That tweet got picked up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, let's move to five.
If you were gonna say it, I was gonna mention it.
Gonna say let's move to five before we get canceled here.
Yeah, good idea.
Who do you have at number five?
So this is a little bit difficult for me because I think it's between Toronto and Boston. And as I've noted numerous times on this podcast, I'm flip-flopping between the two so often. I still think Boston might rate it just a little bit higher. But at the same time, I just don't want to sleep on Toronto because I could so easily be wrong.
Yeah.
so very easily. So you know what? It's Bastanto. It's a joint effort. Oh. It's a combined team. I don't care.
Yeah. No, it's totally fair, because my gut was to put Boston a little higher as well, but then I remember, like, we didn't really see fully healthy Toronto all year.
Right. I mean,
it was like someone was in and out of the lineup pretty much consistently.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, like, again, it goes back to the ceiling conversation. I feel like Boston, like, gut feeling, Boston's ceiling is a little bit higher, and it might all come down to Tatum just, like, as we talked about an episode or two ago, like him taking that leap into superstardom right before the season shut down. That said, I mean, Kemba Walker does not seem like he's 100%. That knee still seems to be bothering him a little bit. The Celtics are downplaying it and saying it's, you know, they're just trying to like ramp him up slowly so he's ready for the playoff games, but it is something to monitor at least. So yeah, I mean, originally I had Boston 4, Toronto 5, but I'm with you. It, like, the margin is so thin, and I could go back and forth anytime that, like, 4A, 4B is okay with me. Right. Like, it's effectively a tie. Like, if those two teams meet in the second round, I have no idea who I will pick. It will come down to, frankly, what, you know, is Kemba Walker healthy? Like, what condition are these two teams in when they actually book that meeting? Because right now, all I would pick is it's going 7 games.
Yeah, that will be one of the times we actually have a coin toss on this podcast without having a redraft.
Because, right, yeah. Right.
But to your point, I mean, you're not wrong about someone being out of the lineup for Toronto virtually every single game. So the Raptors played 64 games before the season got suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 players cracked 55 played games.
Yeah, I'm going to look. They had 15 different starting lineups this year.
Yeah.
No, and look, none of
the
them.
3 guys that played over 55 are Terrence Davis, OG Anunoby, Chris Boucher. Like, great players, not stars, mind you. So that means everyone else missed over 9 games.
Yeah. I mean, Gasol was the big one. Yeah. And now he came back looking, you know, we saw Skinny Melo and Skinny Jokic. We add Skinny Gasol to the list.
Can he get even skinnier? Because it seems like every single year he comes back skinnier.
I know. Soon he's going to be out here looking like Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, he's going to be Bulbul.
Yeah. All right. So that brings us to the top 3, Mort. It's been these 3 teams all year as the finals favorites, the titles favorites. I mean, we mentioned earlier the Clippers are dealing with a couple personnel losses as of now. I mean, again, hopefully Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrez are all back by the time the games really start to matter here. But who do you have at number 3?
Lakers.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even have to think about it. That's pretty obvious to me. You have 2 guys on that roster.
Yeah.
That's what you. I'm sorry, Kyle Kuzma fans. I understand that you love him for no reason whatsoever. The Lakers have 2 players.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, like, the Bradley loss really does loom large in my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, subbing him out effectively for Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith is a significant downgrade.
Yeah.
So that, beyond just, yes, they have 2 players, but, like, you know, Danny Green is a good player. Like, they have Kyle Kuzma. I know he's overrated, but, like, they have some competent rotation players. But compared to the Bucks and compared to the Clippers, both of whom depth is such an asset, like, they both have top tier superstar players as well. But then they also have a much, much deeper bench or a deeper, even the, you know, the rest of their starting lineup is significantly better than what the Lakers are trotting out there. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what does it for me.
So here's an interesting thought I just had. It might be dumb. It's definitely dumb. So if we look at the Bucks compared to the Lakers, right? So right now I have Giannis over LeBron as a player. I think Giannis is better.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Davis is better than Middleton, but I don't think that, you know, the disparity between those two are necessarily tremendously great. Like, yes, Anthony Davis, clear-cut, like, first-team All-NBA for me,
mm-hmm.
but Middleton is like, I think we had him on the, was it the third team?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so right there, you have two duos who in talent are somewhat comparable. I think that's fair to say. And then after that comes the bench and like the drop off with the Lakers, whereas the drop off with the Bucks is not really that severe whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like you have Giannis and Middleton, but then it drops down to like Bledsoe, Brook Lopez, like still players who are highly, highly influential. Whereas like who's the third best guy from the Lakers? You mentioned Danny Green. Is that Danny Green? Going from Anthony Davis to Danny Green, like that drop, it will kill a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So ultimately, when I look at those teams and people are like, oh yeah, this is the Lakers' time to win a championship. Like, are you kidding me in a playoff context?
Right.
Like, I still think they're great. I think they should make the conference finals, but at no point, like, let me reiterate this. At no point would I be surprised if a team with greater depth just took them out of the playoffs altogether before they made the finals or even the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would shock me here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are so heavily dependent on LeBron and Davis to be great every single night. And more often than not, they are. So, right. I mean, you know, LeBron James can, we've seen this for the last 15 years. Like, he can make up, he could paper over a lot of weaknesses, regardless of what team he's on. And Anthony Davis is, you know, quite arguably the best player he's ever played with, or if not the best player, at least like the one who fits, you know, the superstar that fits him the best. Like,
no, he's the best player he's ever played with. Don't worry. You can say that. Okay, because it's not wrong. Like, yeah, it's not Kyrie.
No, I was going to say D-Wade. But even, you know, D-Wade
was... He was past prime D-Wade.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And regardless, I mean, it took LeBron and D-Wade almost 2 years to really figure out how to play with one another. LeBron and Anthony Davis, their skill sets so obviously would complement each other and then did. Like, they hit the ground running, and we saw it this year. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, I would hesitate. You know, you were talking about, like, the difference in talent between the star duos. I do think there is a pretty substantial gap between Davis and Middleton. Not that Middleton isn't a top 20-ish player, or, like, top 25 if you want to go that far down, but, like, the gap between... You know, top eight, wherever, like LeBron and Giannis, one and two in some order. And then Davis, I would have to go, we'll do it next episode, I guess. But, you know, top eight's the floor for him. And I think the gap between that and, you know, between 8 and 15 and between 15 and 25 or wherever Middleton's going to land, I think that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like the collectiveness of the duos. Like, if you took the duo of Giannis and Middleton and the duo of LeBron and Davis and you kind of stacked them up against each other, like, yes, maybe LeBron and Davis would rank out a little bit higher, but like totality-wise, it wouldn't be so much, like, it wouldn't top out, it wouldn't break the curve, whereas if you compare the benches, it would. So again, this is all about like the drop-off.
And either way, yeah, exactly. You know, it doesn't make up for the amount of depth that the Bucks, or the advantage that the Bucks would have over the Lakers in terms of depth and just, I mean, other starters. Like, you know, Eric Bledsoe, Brook Lopez, Wes Matthews are, like, I would take those guys over, again, who's going to be starting for the Lakers with Bradley, Danny Green, and who?
I mean, according to Lakers fans, when they signed J.R. Smith, apparently, some of them thought it would be a good idea to say they scare it now and like pointed their finger at Milwaukee because for some reason J.R. Smith should scare the Bucks.
Right? No, just no.
Yeah. As you can tell, I'm not really high on the Lakers this year. I think they just need a little bit more.
Yeah. So that brings us to the top two, Mort. Who do you have at number two, and who do you have at number one?
So, number two, I actually have the Clippers. They were number one for me going into the season.
Yep.
They dropped because I honestly didn't think that Milwaukee would just be this dominant. Like, what the Bucks are doing is incredible. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that doesn't take any way away from the Clippers. Kawhi is outstanding. Like, missed 13 games this year, which isn't really a whole lot when you think about it, but just 27, 7 and 5, 2 threes, 7 three throws. Lou Williams, still a bucket. Paul George, 21 and 6. Marcus Morris came in and struggled a little bit, but maybe this time off will, you know, have fixed that. Montrez, Landry Shamet, Beverly. Like, there's just Ivica Zubac as well. Like, he should play more. He's just good. There's just so much to like here. I mean, the depth, the star power, the roster symmetry, the fact that they can play like a defensive-oriented game when they need to, or the fact that they can play an offensive-oriented game if they need to. Like, the one big thing that they might be lacking is rebounding, but hey, healthy Joakim Noah.
Right.
Like, what? Who, by the way, has not lost his passing touch one bit. Mm-hmm. So, where exactly is their weakness? That's what I want to know.
So why don't you have a number one?
Because Giannis is virtually flawless.
That's fair. I mean, I had the Clippers number one when I made my first list a couple days ago, and then just the news of how many players are out of their rotation right now. Yeah. Again, like, hopefully these guys will all come back and be healthy and ready to go when the playoffs start, in which case I probably would have the Clippers above the Bucks, honestly. That's just the unknown right there. It bumps them down slightly. Also, like, Paul George looked effing good in that scrimmage the other day. I know.
Yes, he did.
You don't want to read too much into any of these, but I'm not reading it into like, oh, this guy had this number of points at this number. It's like, how do these guys visually look? Like, you know, what are they able to do on the court? And he, man, if that's the Paul George, you know, that's playoff P right there. Like, that's the guy who could be that lethal number two on a championship team. It is no disrespect to the Bucks, and they have been the best team in basketball all year. And, like, it's much like Boston and Toronto, where this is a 1A, 1B type situation for me. The lack of Budenholzer adjustments in the playoffs, and this is dating back to his Atlanta days, this is not only with the Bucks, gives me the slightest hesitation that, you know, if they find themselves in a series where they are schematically outmatched, like, Giannis is going to do Giannis things, right? Like, Giannis is going to give you 30-plus points, 15 rebounds, mm-hmm. 6 or 7 assists. Like, he is not going to go down without a fight. But I do worry that, like, the Bucks could just get out-coached here. And I feel more confident in a Doc Rivers team being able to adjust on the fly than I do a Mike Budenholzer team. And it's really one of the things that's separating these two teams in my mind.
Oh, I want to rant right now.
Please. Well, we're going long, but if it's quick rant.
It's a quick rant. I'm so tired of the Mike Budenholzer narrative. Okay. You bring it up. I'm sorry. This is not directed at you. This is directed at this constant narrative that's been running for at least, you know, a year since the Bucks got bounced last year. Like, that was 1 year, first year on the job. Like, cut him some slack. It's he was a 60-win coach last year. With the Atlanta Hawks, he never had that one guy who could take over. And if there's something that, you know, the NBA stratosphere all agree on, is that you need a top-tier superstar who can constantly take over at will to really be good and to win you a championship. Mm-hmm. Who was that guy when he coached Atlanta? Honestly, yeah. Who was that guy?
That's fair.
There wasn't one. Right. And
like, Al Horford.
I mean, right? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, his point guard was Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
Like, come on. And yet, for some reason, we keep having this thing with, oh, Mike Budenholzer might get out-coached. Like, stop it. Stop it. This is getting ridiculous.
I think it's one of those things where it's like, it's happened enough times now that you need to prove us wrong. And he'll have that opportunity. No,
come on. Look at the roster, though. You have to take the roster into account.
I know. I mean, yeah, like, he against the LeBron James team, he's not the only coach or the only team to have run up against LeBron James and get knocked out. So it's like, I don't want to hold that against him too much. But, I mean, just like, he has the opportunity to prove us wrong. But until that happens, I think it's a fair thing to just keep in the back of your mind.
Okay, then by that logic, we should say the same about Brad Stevens.
I never got caught up in the Brad Stevens hype.
I'm just saying, like, yeah, we should put that mantra onto every coach who apparently hasn't won a ring within 5 years. I mean,
well, win a ring, but like, I mean, if you're not gonna, I mean, you've okay. seen coaches in playoff settings make yeah. major schematic changes based on what they're seeing on a matchup to matchup basis.
Correct.
And that's that malleability is, I think, what separates good from great coaches. We saw it. I mean, Nick Nurse is one of the most malleable, and that's what makes him so damn good. He fits his scheme to his personnel, not vice versa. He doesn't say, this is my scheme, this is what we're going to do, you guys figure it out. He says, okay, you know, we're going to trot out a box and one at times. Like,
right?
Being that kind of willing to tinker and willing to experiment is great. Because, like, the Bucks have a very regimented system of, you know, we're going to drop Brook Lopez back, dare opponents to shoot threes, have Giannis roam everywhere.
Yeah.
That's great. And it's worked. I mean, they had the best defense in the league. I'm not saying this wasn't a smart strategy, but what happens if an opponent figures it out? Like, what's your counterpunch?
Right. And so I think when they lost last year to Toronto, mm-hmm. sorry, I think it was more so a question about offense than it was defense, though. Like, look at their shooting percentages.
Yeah.
This was just a question of getting punched in the mouth by a very, very fantastic Toronto defense and not being able to recover. Like, but why are we sort of assuming that pattern is going to repeat itself, though? That's probably the thing that I have a problem with. That mm-hmm. we kind of anticipate a specific pattern to repeat itself, which I don't think is fair, because what we're basically saying is we don't trust Michael Budenholzer to have learned anything in the one plus year since he lost in the playoffs in 2019.
I just think the Bucks throughout most of the regular season haven't really been tested. Like, they've been so good that they haven't been in these situations where you're going to need to see what happens when they get down big and they need to figure out, what do we do against an opponent that's figured out our scheme.
So I would look at that as an asset. If you haven't been tested, it's because you're so good you're pounding everyone else in every game.
Yeah, and like, if it is a Clippers-Bucks finals.
Right.
The Bucks' size is going to be a massive asset against the Clippers. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're ranking teams based on, like, championship odds, just because the Bucks are in the East, I think they would have an inherent advantage over any Western Conference team, just because, you know, I mean, we're saying there is a tier of three at the top: Lakers, Clippers, Bucks. Two of them are in the West, one of them is in the East. You know, you said it earlier, you're penciling the Bucks into the finals.
Yeah.
You could feel pretty strongly about the Clippers' chances, but even still, I don't think you could say I'm definitely penciling the Clippers in for the finals right now. So, like, if you're evaluating this by championship odds, I think, yeah, the Bucks by default, just based on them being in the East and them being, you know, having the best record in the league and so on and so forth, like, they proved that they should go into these playoffs as the finals favorite. But, I mean, just, again, personally, it's the Clippers having Kawhi and Paul George that they can both throw at Giannis and Chris Middleton, and then them having other guys who can take over. Like, the additions of Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson will have flown under the radar for most casual NBA fans, but those address two big holes on their team. Now you have Reggie Jackson, like, was overtaxed. It was, you know, on his 5-year, $80 million contract in Detroit, never lived up to that as a backup point guard at the bare minimum. Yeah, that's I would much rather have Reggie Jackson right now than Howell Neto on the Sixers as their backup point guard, you know? And, like, Marcus Morris just gives them more size, more versatility. They can switch 2 through 4 pretty much at will. You know, having Pat Bev just be able to hound guards, having Lou Williams and Montrez off the bench is like, you don't have those kind. Most teams have one microwave scorer like that. They have two. Then you have Landry Shamet as the, you know, off bench flamethrower. Like, I mean, it will be razor thin, and it'd be a fascinating matchup of contrast because the Bucks size could take advantage. I mean, that, you know, you were saying, what's the Clippers' weakness? Is it maybe defense pre Noah edition, or like rebounding?
Rebounding,
yeah. Just front court defense, rebounding, whatever. Shot rim protection. It'd be really interesting, but yeah, I mean, going into this, assuming the Clippers are fully healthy and together, I'd have them slightly above the Bucks, but again, it's like a 1A, 1B. They're super close.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that if they met in the finals, the Bucks are absolutely going to win. It would be a fascinating series that could go like both ways.
Yeah.
My point is just, I'm tired of the narrative around Bud, considering, you know, what he's doing with these guys. I mean,
that's fair.
You can see the pattern emerging that hiring Bud was very, very good for Giannis. Like, the numbers back it up.
Yeah.
The numbers, the accolades, the team success, like, I just don't think he's finished. I think he had 1 year with the Bucks so far. Like, this is his second. And in the playoffs, you know, they met a team that everyone kind of slept on, and they were completely annihilated. But I think it's just wrong to, like, not anticipate him to grow, which I'm not saying you don't, but just read the general consensus about Bud, it's like, oh, yeah, then Buck will mess it up again. Like, what? Yeah. I don't think that's fair. And then when people point to the Atlanta years, I can't stop laughing, because look at who the best on-ball creator was. Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
Jeff Teague, man. Like, what he did with that Atlanta roster was incredible. Yeah. No, name me five other coaches who could take that roster and turn them into, like, what was it, a 60-win team?
Yeah, and they got the four All-Stars.
Yeah.
The player of the month was their whole team.
Right. Oh, God, yeah. Like, yeah. I'm just kind of fed up with that narrative. I think there are bigger fish to fry, is what
I'm
saying.
That's fair. Yeah. Well, I'll just end on this note. It is halfway through the second quarter. Sixers 38, Grizzlies 16. So all of our analysis was wrong. The Sixers are winning the championship.
You know what? I'll go out on a limb here. I'm not going to say I'm going to get a face tattoo. If the Philadelphia 76ers win the championship, I will get a tattoo on my arm that just says 76.
Or TTP?
No.
Sam Hinkie's face?
Look, here's the thing. People won't know, and I'll have to explain it every single time.
Perfect. You should have to explain every single time for doubting Sam Hinkie.
I used to doubt him, so you know what? You know what? You're on. You're on. I'll get CTP.
Okay.
Tattooed on my left arm if the Philadelphia 76ers win the championship in this bubble.
I'm going to, on the next media availability, I will inform every player and coach that my co-host has pledged this to give them some extra motivation in the bubble.
You go right ahead.
Well, that is a good place to wrap up. Please follow us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. Mort will post a video of him getting this tattoo in mid-October, and I'm already excited for that. You can also find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we are being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. There's no movie review this time around because we're going way too long, so that's going to be next time.
Good, yeah.
Later, don't die.